Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, December 12, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 30% off your new account for 3 months, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT12. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
I'm Nicole Lee.
And joining us from CNET.com in New York City, Mr. John Falcone, Executive Editor. Welcome, John.
Thanks for having me, guys. Great to see you again.
Good to be on a podcast with you again, man. I enjoy talking to Mr. Falcone. He's a smart guy. Interested to hear his perspective on the stories today. We've got Sarah Lane out in Barcelona. She's on vacation. Jason Howell out. Who knows where he is? He has the day off. But we still have lots of tech news. So let's sink our teeth into a rumor being reported by Deal Reporter, Verizon looking into buying Netflix. This comes on the heels of the end of last week. CEO Lowell McAdam had mentioned they'd looked into buying Hulu. There were rumors about them teaming up with Coinstar to jointly provide a streaming service alongside the Redbox DVD rental service. There was talks of Verizon just starting their own streaming service. Now, Netflix stock spiking 6% on the rumor that Verizon might just gobble them up while the stock's cheap.
Verizon's worth like over $100 billion.
Yeah.
Last year, they had something like $33 billion in cash reserves. They could just outright buy Netflix if they wanted to. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if this is the greatest idea. I mean, I'm just thinking immediately people are going to think about net neutrality issues. If Verizon did own Netflix, are they going to prioritize their content on their networks? But then again, Verizon isn't going to be building out their services as much with Fios because they admitted, and I think a UBS investor meeting, that they weren't going to be doing that fiber.
They could still, they could prioritize it on their subsidiary, their joint Verizon Wireless subsidiary that they run with Vodafone.
But wouldn't it be cheaper for them to just buy out their competitors, like buy out the Redbox and make up, you know, be a solid competitor against Netflix?
Rather than buying Netflix?
Rather than buying them, because like the
subscriber,
because it's cheaper, and you know Netflix is kind of, I think, in sort of troubled waters right now, just because they have all this like goodwill taken away from them. The whole Quickster debacle and the Reed Hastings has not been, you know, such good reputation these days, and to have, I think it's just better to have like a good solid competitor against Netflix.
Deadline Hollywood notes that Netflix has $4.5 billion in financial commitments to licensing, so it actually would be cheaper just to buy the Netflix subscriber list away than to actually buy all of Netflix. John, what do you think of this? I mean, is Netflix even in the position where they would want to sell to somebody like Verizon?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like Netflix is sort of two different stories these days. There's the stock story, which is one, and that's been kind of disastrous for them this year. I frankly still think Netflix is a great service. I mean, they really screwed up on messaging and with the price hike, but it was really interesting. We just got a new coworker here from Australia, Ty Pendlebury, and he just was looking at all this, the complaints about Netflix with his eyes bugging out of his head. He's like, what are you guys complaining about? $8 a month for all these movies? You know, we'd kill to have that overseas.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not somebody can take them out, I think it's kind of a financial story. But it does. There is a second part of this that it's all about the licensing. And the licensing fees are going to start skyrocketing. And that's a problem for Netflix. It's a problem for Hulu. It's a problem for anybody in this space. And that remains to be seen as we go forward.
I kind of feel like the story for Netflix through all of 2012 is, are they going to survive? Are they going to be acquired? Are they going to make it? Because 2013 is when they start producing original programming. They've commissioned it. It takes a while to get that kind of stuff off the ground. And they are pinning all their hopes on the idea that they will have some hits and people will see them as a cheaper version of HBO and have exactly that reaction that you're talking about from your coworker, which is like, wow, $7.99, and I get all these movies and old TV shows, and I get, you know, House of Cards and all, you know, all this new stuff. But they have to make it through 2012.
let's hope they survive in time for us to see new Arrested Development episodes. Please.
And new Arrested Development. Yeah, that's exactly true.
With Verizon's pre-existing, contacts with the television networks, I mean, they're already a cable company. Do you think they would have any leverage if they bought Netflix to get better deals from the studios to get content on that thing? Because they're already paying them because they have all these TV networks on their cable systems.
Mm-hmm.
Could they broker like a package deal where Netflix has to compete against cable companies? Verizon is a cable company, so they might. I'm just kind of curious if that would work to Verizon's advantage to bring the cost because it's $4.5 billion.
Could they bundle Netflix into every Verizon set-top box, right?
Well, yeah, that, and I just wonder about the networks. Would they work better with Netflix now that they have pre-existing deals? But
it actually could work the opposite.
Yeah, right. I was thinking about
which
the opposite.
Remember the rumor last week that Verizon would start their own streaming was that it would only stream outside of areas that had Verizon Fios. They're obviously not going to roll Verizon Fios television out anymore, probably not internet anymore, because they struck a deal with the Spectrum Co. folks to get Spectrum. So they're going to be selling Comcast and Time Warner Cable in other parts of the country. And I don't see them buying Netflix for that reason, because it's going to make things more complicated if they're competing with the Spectrum Co. partners and having to deal with the programmers that they want to carry for their existing Fios service. So
you know, it's funny that,
yeah, go ahead, John.
Recently, when I went to San Francisco, actually, my DVR completely malfunctioned and I missed all my TV shows for the week. Got home and was able to watch all of that week's shows that I wanted on cable on demand. And it just made me think, you know, if these guys actually had all the shows going back to episode one, you wouldn't really need Netflix from a TV perspective. And that's just like another case where Netflix is beating the cable companies in their own game. But if they just stepped up with the licensing, they already have the technology. Just make a better interface and call it a day.
Yeah. Looks like the AT&T T-Mobile merger is starting to fall apart. Continuing to fall apart. It started a while ago. U.S. District Judge Ellen Huvel has granted a joint request for a stay by the Department of Justice and AT&T. Remember how mad they were at the end of last week that the Department of Justice had asked for a stay, that the FCC had gone and released all of the details about their request. AT&T says now, we are actively considering whether and how to revise our current transaction to achieve the necessary regulatory approvals. A status conference has been asked to be scheduled for January 18th, which means that AT&T's court case with the Department of Justice is withdrawn, giving them time to negotiate a new deal that they will then check in with the judge on January 18th to inform her of where they stand.
Do you think a month is enough time to get a significantly different deal? I mean, they've obviously been talking back and forth already. But, I mean, do you think that in 1 month's time, so a month,
yeah, a month
and
with
days,
the holiday break, too.
Yeah.
And then the government's going to be closing up like a week. So, I mean, I wonder, I'm very curious to see if AT&T could put anything together or if they're just saying, look, we don't want to admit defeat this year. Next year we will.
This gave AT&T the chance to restart the clock on their purchase of the 700 megahertz spectrum from Qualcomm. You know, they're saying we need to buy spectrum. They had been trying to buy some spectrum from Qualcomm. That had been put on hold while the FCC evaluated the T-Mobile merger. Now that's back with a retroactive date of November 29th. So at least there's some positive news there for AT&T. But it sounds like this merger is off as we knew it. The question now is, what does it turn into? Does it turn into AT&T buys most of T-Mobile and divests itself of big parts of it to satisfy the DOJ? Or does it turn into AT&T merely buys the spectrum and they're joined by a bunch of other partners to decide who gets what and T-Mobile gets split up? Or does it go somewhere else? John, what's your best bet?
Yeah, it's funny. I heard you talking about this on the show, the weekly show last night. I think what it comes down to is, what was the real reason behind this merger? Was it just to get spectrum? Was it to take out a lower cost competitor? I think it was one or both of those, not so much let's just get a few customers, because that wasn't really something AT&T needed compared to the size of T-Mobile. It's interesting, like you had said previously, does T-Mobile exist at all in any equation going forward, whether this happens or not?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. I mean, the $4 billion question,
yeah,
I guess.
Right. $39 billion.
Yeah, no, because if T-Mobile survives, even if AT&T says, okay, we're not buying T-Mobile, the fate of T-Mobile is still in question. It's not like it's, you know, saved all of a sudden. It's not like the customers are all of a sudden, you know, they have a secure future, because T-Mobile, let's face it, it will be the distant fourth carrier.
But wait, if this deal doesn't go through and AT&T has to pay that breakup fee and give away some spectrum, I think it's $1 billion worth, couldn't T-Mobile do something at that point? I mean, Deutsche Telekom could figure out, look, we have billions of dollars now. What can we possibly do now to become a real competitor? Because this True. Is what's the breakup fee? I think it's $6 billion, I want to say. I keep messing
I,
it
I
up.
Think it's four, but well, it's also calculated plus, of cash yeah. plus spectrum. Right. So yeah. it depends on how you
But these
look
are
at
billions
it.
Of dollars. So they're not getting bought out directly. But, I mean, couldn't they? I mean, they're not going to just close up shop and be done. They have to keep trying.
Right.
It's
but
a
then,
business.
But they'll be fighting against Sprint as well, who will also be really fighting, clawing their way up, you know, against AT&T and T-Mobile. So will they be the fourth behind Sprint? Will they be the third? I mean, they're still competing for the, you know, third or fourth place.
Well, Dish Network CEO Joseph Clayton told Bloomberg he'd like to partner with T-Mobile if AT&T's bid to buy the carrier falls apart. They would like to start their own carrier over there at Dish, or at least, you know, partner with somebody who has some spectrum and know-how to do it. If T-Mobile's not interested, he said, we'll go to Sprint.
Yeah,
but
well,
they definitely want to get into this game. So there's another suitor for T-Mobile out there. And again, it could be also a partnership where AT&T, or not a partnership, but a combined deal where AT&T says, we'll restructure this deal, we'll avoid the penalty payment, we'll take the spectrum, but Dish gets the other parts of T-Mobile, or a rump T-Mobile is operated by Deutsche Telekom with less spectrum, and they get spectrum from somewhere else, and Dish operates it. There's all kinds of different ways they could go. I'm not sure which one is the most likely.
I mean, every cable company tries to branch out. We had, like, I think Time Warner was doing branded versions of like, LTE devices with, not LTE, WiMAX devices with Clear. They seem to be branching out further and further. They want to have one bill for everything you have, your wireless phone, your landline, if you have one.
Yeah, everyone wants to take all your money in one
exactly.
bill.
Exactly. I mean, Dish has been trying this with their Blockbuster service. They're like, look, we have another service, pay us some more money. If they pick up T-Mobile, maybe it would be interesting to see what they would do with it. I mean, Dish hasn't done exactly spectacular things with Blockbuster, though. But then again, if you have this is some great infrastructure,
that's a great
though.
Point. Ayaz, Dish is such a weird company because they have the potential to do so much. They had the Blockbuster thing. Before that, they had Slingbox, and that was another just really groundbreaking company. And it's kind of like once it goes in the Dish, that you never hear from these things again. They sort of
gets
keep
bogged down by bureaucracy, baby.
They don't seem to fully act on these things.
Yeah, do you think Dish is wise to get into becoming a wireless carrier? That seems a little farther afield. Slingbox made sense to me, but this is a new business that they don't really know how to do yet.
It's a new business, but I guess you have to think, you know, going forward, thinking long term, beyond 4G to maybe like a 5G world, maybe
Dare
someday. Yeah, would they want to be like looking for just like a different way to get you programming of any time type, whether or not it's voice service or data service or TV service.
So you get special access to
space or a tower.
You get special access to Blockbuster on your T-Mobile phone because you'll have it built in. I would
built
imagine
in.
You'd see some kind of weird deals together. Wouldn't be great.
Well, then that lends some credence to Verizon wanting to buy Netflix. They just want to put it on all their
Everybody's
phones.
Everybody's trying to get
VCast.
All together.
We got Netflix now.
That's true. Screw VCast for many reasons.
Yeah, Nicole just agrees with that part.
Screw VCast.
Screw VCast.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor. This episode brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. Squarespace.com has an easy-to-use UI that's great for experts or beginners. That's the best thing. It doesn't really matter. If you go into Squarespace as a beginner, you don't have to know any HTML. You don't have to know any CSS. You just start picking your colors, choosing how everything lays out, and you make a beautiful website. But if you do know CSS, you do know a little HTML, you can get under there and tweak the code. In fact, I do that every week on Sword and Laser. I go in there and I make the post, and then there's a few things that Veronica wants a certain way, and I have to go in and I have to tweak the HTML, or she gets mad at me. But I do most of it in the what you see is what you get editor, because it's just a lot easier. You also have iPhone, iPad, and Android apps for updating your blog on the go. Best part, too, is they have a special support team to give you personal help 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So you got a question like, I want to do a certain thing. How's the best way to do that? Just give them a call anytime, 24 hours a day. Squarespace.com for all your website needs. Great for a business, actually. We've had a listener actually set up a Squarespace.com website for a hot dog restaurant and then hand it over to the restaurant because they didn't have a website. While he was just sitting there eating a hot dog in the restaurant. That's how fast it is. You don't need a credit card to try it out. You just set one up in minutes. Check it out at squarespace.com. Sign up is free, no credit card needed. If you do decide to keep it after the free trial, use the offer code TNT12 and get 30% off for 3 months. That's squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT12. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. On to the Amazon Kindle Fire Andy Leese, we'll get to the end of Amazon Kindle Fire in a second, but Andy Leese, head of Windows Phone, has moved on to a new role. Steve Ballmer wrote an internal memo that All Things D got a hold of, and it said, I have asked Andy Leese to move to a new role working for me on a time-critical opportunity. I'm guessing it's a condo or a timeshare. time-critical opportunity focused on driving maximum impact in 2012 with Windows Phone and Windows 8. We have tremendous potential with Windows Phone and Windows 8, and this move sets us up to deliver against that potential. Terry Meyerson, the corporate VP who has led engineering efforts on the phone unit, gets extra responsibilities. He's going to add biz dev, marketing, and a few other responsibilities, but he doesn't get the title of president. Andy Leese keeps that. So, temporary move? Or Andy Leese, what could they possibly be building in there?
Well, looking at the quote, it looks like basically Ballmer saying, we need somebody to talk to the phone division and the Windows 8 division at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now they're so divided, apparently they're not talking well enough.
Well, Windows 8 is their tablet strategy.
Right, so I mean, that's the thing. What's time critical? They're only, a year or two behind the iPad? And and Ice Cream Sandwich is coming out very soon on tablets. So they have to really make a splash with Windows 8, that is. And considering the similarities between Windows Phone and Windows 8, the tablet that starts tile screen, I mean, these things should work together very well, in theory. Could you imagine if you try to sell this product and you're doing this marketing campaign, and then you find out the two devices don't work together? Would drive people insane. So this is going to be critical to figure out how to make a phone work with the tablet interface, how to get the desktop to work with the phone and the tablet, because if you have any of these three devices, they should always feel seamless. I mean, this is something Apple's trying with iCloud, and that's kind of iffy. If Microsoft can figure it out, they're going to have a huge jump. Plus, they have Xbox 360 sitting around. They sync that in, and they're pretty good.
What do you think, Nicole? You've been following this for a while. What could Andy Leese and Ballmer be building together?
I mean, it does
that would require taking him off the Windows Phone unit.
Yeah, that does seem a little bit suspect. But I do think they're, as you said, Ayaz, they're really trying to do something in a way to get the Windows Phone division, the Windows 8 division, to talk to each other. I mean, in the same way that, they're trying to get, when the playbook first came out, I'm trying to sort of talk to tablets past here, but when the playbook first came out, the big thing about the playbook was that it would work really well with your BlackBerry, right? So this is the same idea. They want to have a Windows 8 tablet system that would really work well with the Windows Phone. And this, it could be just that Windows Phone is just so, it's been established for, about a year or two. Basically a year. And then Windows 8 has been sort of been a separate development platform. Windows 8 is still very PC-like, right? The operating system is run. It's not really Windows Phone. There's
the Metro interface,
yes,
that's very phone-like.
It's very phone-like, but
it's
also
meant for the tablet.
But
yeah,
underneath the Metro interface, there's still the old Windows we know and love is still underneath all of that. So, it's going to be a challenge to sort of integrate both of those together.
John, do you have any guesses about what Leese could be cooking up? Ayaz and Nicole both pretty much think it's integration.
Yeah, I think the little bit of confusion maybe Nicole just expressed on the tablet versus the desktop maybe points to what may be going on here, is that it's really unclear, I think, because I'm confused too, if there's, it's not like there's two Windows 8, basically. There's sort of the desktop one that will have that Metro interface as well, and then this tablet one, which may look the same, but actually be a different product. And that sounds much more phone-like to me. And maybe this is kind of like focusing more on that tablet side of thing that seems more at home with the phone guys than with the desktop guys.
Yeah, because I think the problem with Windows 8 is that Microsoft being Microsoft, is that they just can't let go of the underlying threading, the Explorer, the File Explorer features that they used to have. They just can't let go of that. They can't replace everything with the whole Metro UI. They have their old structure underneath all of that. And, you know, if they can get rid of that, if they can let go of the way it was, they will lose most of backwards compatibility issues, right? So they have those two competing interests.
Well, Microsoft hasn't officially said whether Metro apps will run on a Windows phone. Now, everyone's expecting it because they're all built on the same tools, but they still haven't officially said it. But it would be great if every time you had a Metro app, it was available for your phone as well, so they would always be synced up. Because, I mean, that's something that happens on the iPhone. You might have an iPhone and iPad app, not necessarily a Mac app. I mean, this is kind of a strange inconsistency in Apple's universe that Microsoft could solve.
All right, let's move on to the Kindle Fire, under fire in a New York Times article for what the New York Times reports is a lot of people complaining, no external volume control, off switch is easy to hit, touchscreen's not that responsive. A lot of people upset that when you visit a web page, it shows up in the carousel and there's nothing you can do about it. So I don't know what kind of web pages you might be visiting that you would be embarrassed about.
Barnes & Noble.
But they're going to show up. Yeah, exactly. They're going to show up no matter what you do. So be careful what you visit on that fire and who you show your carousel to in more ways than one. Anyway, Amazon says the Kindle Fire is not only the most successful product it has ever introduced, but they're rolling out an over-the-air update in the next couple of weeks that will improve performance, improve the touch navigation, which has been my big problem with it, and give customers the option to choose what items display on the carousel. So you can visit Barnes & Noble without anyone ever having to know.
So you have the Kindle Fire, Tom.
Do
you agree with the whole touch interface? Do you agree the sluggishness?
It's not awful. It's not horrible. It's just annoying, especially if you're used to a better touchscreen. You start to realize like it's going to take me two or three taps to hit some things. Now, and other things work great. So you know it's not the actual hardware because the carousel, itself, you can slide through that very easily. Mm-hmm. But some things just aren't responsive. So I would like to see that improved, and I would probably use it a lot more.
I've played with the Fire, and I've had that kind of like you have to tap things more than once. But I've had worse devices than this, like my GPS. Like you try to click something,
and then
absolutely.
It's not the worst.
Right.
Ever.
It's definitely not the worst. So like I'm kind of used to going, oh yeah, that didn't register. But I've had my iPod Touch lock up every now and then. And it's not registering clicks and anything. It's not like the screen isn't responsive. The operating system isn't responsive. So this fix is going to help some things. But that off switch is at the bottom, which is very odd. So it's very easy to turn off that.
Always turn it over so the off switch is at the top.
That's an idea. That it should, like,
I mean, I guess I shouldn't have to. But
right. You'd think they would have thought of that. But I mean, I think the New York Times article talked about how, well, this software update isn't going to add external volume controls. This is something that's annoying people. But the big thing
It's $200. Right? Do you expect...
That's why people aren't incensed about it. They're just aggravated.
Aggravated.
I think user profiles would be great on this. Because I've seen people complain, parents complain, my kid's buying thousands of dollars worth of stuff because there's one click, it's attached to our account, because that's how you can share your media.
They need parental controls.
There needs to be some kind of way.
You can turn off one click.
You can turn off one click, but the thing is, if you want to share your own, let's say you have your own digital library... Why would you want to share your books and your digital media with your family? I'm crazy. What was I thinking?
Your family? What?
What about you, John? Have you played around with the Fire much?
Yeah, and everything you guys just said explained why it was such a devil of a product for us to rate. Because a lot of things were done right, and there were some real frustrations with it. And a lot of people approached it the way Nicole just did with, it's $200. It's semi-disposable. It's great.
It's disposable. Throw in the trash. Buy a new one.
As usual, it was expectations, right? If you came to the thing looking for a $200 iPad, man, you're going to be disappointed. If you came to it kind of from nothing and just wanted a cool sort of reader on steroids that did media too, you were overwhelmed and said this was a great value.
Yeah, it's a different category. It's more than an e-reader. People out there who are Kindle fans are like, you can't compare it to an iPad because it's just an e-reader. Well, that's silly. It's a video player. It's email. It is a tablet in a sense, but it isn't the same kind of tablet as the iPad. And so it isn't a fair comparison because the iPad is not only much more expensive, but it's meant to do more things than the Kindle Fire. Do you think we'll see a new Kindle in the spring? That's what this New York Times article speculated.
I say yes.
Yeah?
Because I think the Kindle Fire has had so many negative reviews. So it's underpowered. It's too slow. Maybe it's going to be a fast one.
And a prettier one. That's what they did with the first Kindle. Yeah. They put out this really ugly one that
That's true.
And then when the next one came out, it didn't have to be that good looking for everybody to just rage over it and go, oh, it's so beautiful now.
I think the Kindle Fire will still be around. There'll be like the DX style. It'll be a larger one. The 8.9.
XL.
Well, they're not, whatever they're going to call it, but it'll be a larger one.
It'll be the size of my monitor.
The premium edition versus the budget one, I'm thinking. Just like how there's a $79 Kindle, and then there's the Touch, and then there's a 3G, and there's all
there
the other models.
There should be like even hotter versions, like Kindle Fire Explosion. Well, Kindle Fire.
Yeah. Kindle Backdraft.
Kindle Inferno.
Volcano.
That's Volcano. Ooh, good one.
Actually, I think another company is Volcano.
Okay.
There's a 100% chance there'll be a Kindle Fire 2 next year. The question is it April or May, or is it October, November?
Yeah.
True.
And I'm 50-50. I could see them doing it in the spring because they just want to come out with a new one, but I could see them also waiting until the next holiday cycle. Mm-hmm. And just as a side note, Nook Color got a software update and now has Netflix and Flixster access, as well as access to comics from Marvel, a few other tweaks. So the software upgrade's making it more and more indistinguishable from the Nook tablet, which is $50 more. The Nook tablet has better hardware, but the Nook Color can now almost do everything that the Nook tablet can
with Flixster, that gives you access to ultraviolet movies. So
does it on the tablet?
Well, yeah, that's how it works.
Or on the color?
That's why if you want to use Flixster on an iPod or whatever, you can access your ultraviolet movies.
So there you go.
So they have an access. You have a library of movies.
Both of you that have ultraviolet movies out there.
They got it to work. It
on your Barnes & Noble. Yeah.
Hey, man, Horrible Bosses. It's great.
That's right.
Horrible Bosses, Green Lantern. I mean, there's some movies out there.
All right, let's finish up with Mega Upload. Actually, a couple examples of possible abuses of copyright law. Mega Upload made a promotional video that they put up on Friday, including big names: P. Diddy, Will.i.am, Alicia Keys, Kanye West, Macy Gray, Chris Brown, Mary J. Blige. They posted it to YouTube. Universal Music Group, who are the label that have a lot of these artists on their label, objected on Digital Millennium copyright grounds, said it's a copyright violation, had the video pulled down. Mega Upload counter notice said, oh no, we recorded this entire thing ourselves. We put it up. We recorded it in Auckland, New Zealand. It's ours. You don't own anything in here. We have releases from all of these artists, and they had it put back up. UMG counter noticed again, had it taken back down. And now Kim.com from Mega Upload has said, he's called UMG criminals. And he says they are sending illegitimate takedown notices for content they don't own. Mega Upload has filed suit against Universal in San Jose for abusing the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
We can't figure out exactly what is copywritten here. Because if the song... we can't figure out did they use Universal tools? Probably not. I mean, are they in an area that can't be reproduced, like an image Universal? That we can't figure that out either. Do they have a trademark on one of these words? Like, I don't know, 4%, maybe the internet. I don't know. We can't figure it out yet.
What exactly is it that they say is being infringed?
Well, Universal isn't talking, so we don't know what they have claimed the infringement was. And I don't know that you have to say it. You can just say they're using our copyright. There's a couple clips in there where they're not actually saying Mega Upload, that maybe they didn't record in New Zealand and put in there, possibly, but I don't know that for sure. And they obviously could have been recorded wherever. The song itself, I guess, could be a song that I've never heard of that is actually owned by Universal Music Group. It's very catchy.
There could be a sample under there that could be a part of a Universal song. Maybe. Maybe there's like maybe a guitar riff or a drum beat. They're like, that's our drum beat.
Check it out.
This part, check it out. That could be from anywhere. For free.
Free.
But basically, Universal didn't like the message they were sending and tried to take it down.
Well, that's what Mega Upload says. It's like, they just don't like the fact that we exist. They think we're a haven for piracy, even though we're not.
Well, and
they didn't like that we got all these major artists to advertise for us. I don't know how Mega Upload got all these guys to do the video.
That's true,
either,
too.
But they did.
Premium accounts for free, clearly. Because it's fast as hell, as the ad says. I mean, the music video. It's not an ad.
Yeah, I'm at a loss because it seems like it is merely an abuse of the DMCA to stop Mega Upload from having their promotional video out there.
It absolutely is.
But you have to have at least a pretend reason, even if you're abusing. And I can't see what that would be.
Just make up a reason. or something.
And Hollywood is good at pretend reason.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, it could be that the artist's contracts somehow say that any work the artist does is copyright universal unless otherwise stipulated. And they didn't stipulate that. But Mega Upload says they have releases from the artist. So anyway, Mega Upload taking UMG to court.
Hopefully Universal will put an answer and we'll find out what their reasoning was for this, because it's a little, I mean, they have to put an answer.
Yeah, they're going to have to respond. Yeah. Senator Ron Wyden said Friday he would demand answers from the Department of Homeland Security over the removal of the DJazz1.com website, which was taken down for over a year. It's part of the In Our Sights takedown movement. And then restored last week without any comment why. All of the files for extension, all of the court documents are under seal. So Senator Wyden, through a combination of FOIA requests and other things, says he's going to try to get answers on that. Just sort of an update there, I guess. But two big examples within a week of possible abuses of the system, of current copyright law, when there's not proper oversight. There is no judicial oversight of UMG's takedown of the Mega Upload video. There was no judicial oversight or ability for due process anyway with DeJazz1.com losing their domain name. And yet the Congress is trying to force on us the idea that the entire economy will collapse if we don't give the industry even more power to do things without any proper judicial oversight.
I'd also like to real fast point out that meanwhile, last week, I had to wait in a 30-minute security line at JFK, and I guess the reason so long was because the DHS was trying to take down websites instead of man the security line.
They were busy. They had things in their sights.
But don't you feel more secure now that piracy's not stopped at all?
All right, let's move on to the news fuse. Intel lowered its fourth quarter revenue expectations by $1 billion from $14.7 billion to $13.7 due to the floods in Thailand. Even though PC sales were up in the fourth quarter, manufacturers are ordering fewer processors because they can't obtain hard drives as easily because of those floods. Those floods are impacting hard drive manufacturers particularly.
NPD Group released some stats about the video game industry. Game sales were up 15% year over year, and the top three best-selling games were Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, The Elder Scrolls 5, Skyrim, and Battlefield 3. Hardware sales weren't as good. They were down 9%.
Yeah, but they're loss leaders.
They haven't had a new anything in forever.
A new Nielsen study found that in September, Facebook was the number two most used app on Android, and it's only second to the Android market. Facebook beat out Google apps like Search, Gmail, Maps, and YouTube for the second slot.
So, Facebook winning on Google's home territory.
Yep.
TechCrunch reports that Sunday's refurb touchpad sale sold out in a matter of hours. 16 gigabyte units were gone within 10 minutes. HP held the sale via eBay, which caused eBay to crash and slowed down PayPal as well. But that will probably be it. There should be no more touchpads except for used touchpads on sale for a while, if ever. Maybe 2013.
2013. You can wait. Samsung told Reuters that it sold over 300 million handsets by the end of November in 2011. This is the first time the company has ever sold that many phones. Last year, Samsung sold a paltry 280 million. Not even injunctions can slow Samsung down. Look at that.
The European Commission put the Google/Motorola Mobility deal on hold temporarily to get more information. Amelia Torres, spokesperson for the EC, said the review would continue after certain documents that are essential to its evaluation of the transaction are obtained. Google said this kind of thing is routine.
It's a routine inspection. Google gets those a lot.
Air quotes.
Especially when they're, you know, on their way from Alderaan with secret tapes. A leaked government report says that LightSquared's LTE technology interferes with, quote, the great majority of GPS devices. LightSquared says that the report's conclusions are incorrect and claims that the U.S. government test did not reflect how LightSquared's tech would be used in the real world. LightSquared already has over 30 customers, including Sprint and Best Buy, and is still waiting for the NTIA to make its decision before its network can be activated.
Comedian Louis C.K. released his comedy special available directly to his fans on his website for the price of $5 over the weekend. The special was not aired anywhere else, but still gives C.K. the option of selling those rights later. The video has no DRM or regional restrictions. On the purchase page, Louis C.K. wrote that he knew the lack of DRM would make it easier to pirate, but he wanted people, to get this, to be able to watch the video any way they wanted.
Whoa!
What an idea.
It actually doesn't make it easier to pirate.
Yeah.
It gets pirated anyway. Everything does. It makes it easier for that first person to put it up for piracy, yeah. But yeah, that always happens.
Anyway, the XXX domains went on sale to the public last week. Yay! And it looks like AOL forgot to pick up HuffingtonPost.xxx.
Oops.
Justin Cruz, a man who has no professional relationship to either AOL or HuffPo, picked it up for somewhere between $80 and $100. Universities were quicker on the draw and spent some serious money to protect their reputations. The University of Kentucky spent $3,000 and picked up plenty of names, including Jayhawks.xxx and KUGirls.xxx.
Hey, look at that. A great way to fund your education. We won't be seeing the universities complaining about funding anymore now that they have these XXX domains, right?
I don't know if they'll be using it for XXX reasons.
Oh, I thought... That,
oh, you thought they were branching out?
They're just protecting the domain.
It might redirect. Name. Actually, we don't know that for sure.
I see. all I can say is University of Kentucky, consider what you got
there.
Or your
tuition money went towards this university.
Spend $3,000. John, did you register johnfalcone.xxx?
Oh, now that you mentioned it, you should.
I was going to say, thanks for mentioning that.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that.
Snapped up now.
I did not register TomMerritt.xxx.
All right. We can register each other's.
To my own chagrin. I did register John Falcone. All right, let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
Google's founders, Larry Page, Sergey Brin, and Eric Schmidt, are teaming up to propose to pay the full $33 million cost of revamping the blimp hangar at Moffett Field down here in Silicon Valley. Hangar 1, once home to the airships. I say blimp, it's actually airships. There's a difference there. So they want to revamp the hangar, but they also want to use it, at least up to two-thirds of it, for their fleet of 8 private jets.
So it's not fully altruistic. They're like, you know, we need a space for our jets, all of our 8 private jets, and they're going to spend... Well, this is not so much money. I'm surprised it doesn't cost that much money to have a hangar.
We should have one. Twit hangar.
We should.
We should have put our studio in there. Don't tell Leo. He'll try somehow. It is kind of this weird thing where you're like, you know, it's a great thing that they're helping to restore this historic building. It's an icon. In Silicon Valley, it's very historic. But then when you've realized, like, yeah, we just wanted a place to keep our private jets. Talk about your first world problem, your one percenter problem there. John, where do you keep your private jets?
That's a great question. I'm also I'm trying to make a deal in Lakehurst, New Jersey, where it's a similar hangar set up.
All right, let's move on to the calendar. Chad...
It was 20 years ago today. Paul Koons set up the first website in North America. The Galaxy Nexus LTE is rumored to hit stores on the 15th of December, but reports are saying that many Verizon, Best Buy, and Radio Shack stores are already selling the phone. It's $300.
Where's my phone, Verizon?
I haven't sent it to you, but it's $300. If you want, you can go buy it for $300.
The worst release ever.
To your contract. On February 7th, the International Space Station will get some visitors, not aliens. That's when SpaceX's Dragon will try to dock with it. It's a commercial flight, so you can try to get on there.
It's actually a big deal because this is the first flight of private cargo to the International Space Station. But it's time for incoming, apparently. Let's start off with a voicemail.
You can't stop the incoming.
From Kathleen. She's continuing our conversation about Amazon's campaign to get you to use barcode scanners to look up other stuff. She was using Red Laser and had a positive experience. Here's what she has to say.
Hi, Tech Guys. This is Kathleen calling from Spokane, Washington. And I just was listening to the last podcast where you're talking about the price comparison. I actually did this a couple weeks ago when the Harry Potter DVDs came out. Best Buy had Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1 on sale for $4.99, but Walmart had a better price on the second one that just came out. I went to Best Buy and used Red Laser, and I showed the guy at the register that Walmart had a better price, and right there they discounted me and price matched. So I got the $4.99 part one and $13.86 or whatever of part two. So So they did use that, and you know, because of that, I'll go to Best Buy next time. Thanks. Bye.
So we've had a lot of people write in and say, oh, yeah, they'll only honor printed materials when they price match. But here's Kathleen saying that she had a good store manager that was willing to honor the red laser tag. That red laser tag. That's the right way to do this if you're a retailer, is to, you know, take something like red laser and go, okay, that's going to be legitimate. I know that that's not somebody who just faked up something on their phone. So I'm going to price match it if I have a price match policy, which Best Buy does.
It's weird because I heard similar stories about this during Black Friday when people were selling Kindle Fires for cheap, and people were just emailing each other the picture of the Walmart display saying it's cheaper. And the other stores were price matching based on the picture. So that's, I guess, it just depends on the store.
Yeah. Go ahead, John.
You did just give an idea for like a great Android malware app or something that would just do, you know, fakepricematch.com.
It's red laser with two Z's.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly.
For novelty purposes only, it'll say on the app, just so it doesn't get kicked out.
Exactly. Keith says, hey, TNT crew, in last Friday's episode, you were discussing the new Amazon barcode scanner app. I can see how many retailers would see this as a threat, but some would also see it as an opportunity. When we went to buy my wife's digital SLR, we looked online and went to a local camera chain here in Minnesota, National Camera. Amazon beat them on price, but the service we received sealed the deal with National Camera. I think that is where brick and mortar beats online retailers, but only if they are willing to put in the effort. Great show, guys, and keep up the work. So it's not about location so much. It's about price and service.
And location, you know.
Well, yeah, but I mean, in other words, when I say location, it's not like, well, there's online, there's catalog, and there's
brick and mortar.
There's brick and mortar, although catalog's kind of pretty much the same as online these days. But brick and mortar can have its advantages. I don't think brick and mortar is totally dead. Not for everything. Maybe for some things. John, do you agree?
I absolutely agree. This is the one advantage they have and have to augment, I think. Barnes & Noble is basically trying to play this card with the Nook and kind of trying to turn itself into an Apple store where it's less about buying the thing there, I think, than just saying like, hey, we're in your neighborhood, we're open, and you can come, you know, have any problems, have any questions, come on in, we're here to help.
I think that is a really key advantage that Barnes & Noble has over Amazon, actually, because you can just go into a store and buy the Nook, even if you haven't never heard of the Nook before. Just walk into a Barnes & Noble and you're like, oh, what's this thing?
Yeah. No, I agree. I don't think one has a definitive advantage over the other. There's the convenience of not having to leave your house, but there's also the convenience of being able to leave your house and get it right away instead of having to wait
good
for
service,
shipping.
Of
even
course.
With overnight shipping, you have to wait till tomorrow. There's plenty of times where I've gone
tomorrow's too long away
to an electronics
it's too
store
far away,
because I'm
Tom.
Like, I want to have
tomorrow's
it this evening.
Too far away.
I want to
yep.
play with it. I'm impatient.
We got an email
the
from
thing that the stores really hate is that they're becoming the showroom for Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why it's an emotional response to ban these sorts of scanning apps.
So we got an email from Marlon, otherwise known as the guy from Trinidad. There was one major improvement that the latest Xbox dashboard update brought that was totally left out of the press, but very important for me. Netflix. Before the update, Latin America and the Caribbean could only get Netflix streaming on the PS3 and the Wii, not on iPads in the Caribbean as well, and that's why I'm glad I'm with Android. However, with the update, it was finally enabled. We still have some major shows still only available in Portuguese and Spanish, and we also have a limited library compared to the U.S., but this update has made my possible transition away from cable that much closer. I just have to learn Spanish.
Yeah, that's cool. I like getting these reviews from elsewhere because I can look at my Xbox dashboard and tell you what I think, but it actually plays out differently because of the different services in different parts of the world. So thanks for that, Marlon. John, what did you think of the dashboard update? Were you impressed?
I was playing around with that yesterday. I did like it. Somebody was complaining that Netflix wasn't showing most recently viewed.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that was true or if that was something just from the earlier in the week or what, but kind of like we were talking before about Microsoft, it is kind of interesting that whole Metro interface seems to be like a unifying force across all their products now.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Thanks for everybody who submitted stories for us to consider at technewstoday.reddit.com. We use that every single day. That's where the mega upload story came from. And you folks on Reddit letting us know about it. Technewstoday.reddit.com. Go there and either submit stories or vote them up or down or both. And don't forget to submit your favorite moments of Tech News Today or any show on Twit at twit.tv/best of. If you're sitting there thinking, oh, I hope they put this moment I remember that was really funny in the best of show, that's the place to tell us about it, twit.tv/best of. John, it's great having you on the show. Let folks know about what you're doing over there at CNET Reviews and where they can find your work.
Easiest place to go is straight to CNET.com. We are right now working on a lot of CES preparation, which is going to be huge for us. And we're also doing a lot of year-end stuff like that, basically, for leading right up into the holiday.
Is the stage still going to be up there in the South Hall on the second floor like it usually is?
This year, absolutely. Same yep. place as the past several years.
Well, we'll swing by and say hello.
Please do.
All right. Thanks, John. Thanks, everybody, for listening or watching. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. And give us a call. Our phone number is 260-TNT-SHOW. Mark the Terpster Turpin joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.